Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on the companies we mention. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to Monday Upbeat Markets with me, Graham Dixon.
And me, Kevin Hansman.
How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm good. It's actually, as we record this, it's still Sunday with me, but that's because I'm in Hawaii and 11 hours behind you. So yeah, all good.
All good, 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 good. So what are we going to talk about today, Kevin?
Well, is there much to talk about other than politics going crazy in the United Kingdom and in the USA, and we need a war settled somewhere in the world, whether it's Ukraine, whether it's Middle East, it doesn't really matter. I don't know. We've got to get these things sorted out. Common sense surely has to prevail. That's about all I have to say.
Oh, well, that's fine. That's all I want to brush upon about that subject. So I think what we're going to be talking about today is Energy Pathways. We've got the CEO, Ben Klube, of Energy Pathways. And we've also got the non-executive director of Tiraparty Graphite, Christian Dennis, who is also the head of corporate broking at Optiva Securities, coming on later in the interview.
Very good. That should be an interesting one. Bit of a broker view of the markets, as well as Tirupati. Tirupati's had a bit of a disaster scenario really over the last few years, but I think hopefully now it's started to get its act together and cleared a lot of the stuff that was there and moved a little bit like EQTech, and which has now become Forgent, and not that much different, that it's sort of having a second life now.
I just realized it's called Total Graphite, not Tiraparty. I've changed their name to Total Graphite, probably just to remarket themselves after the disaster they once was.
Yeah, which is the same as EQTech, didn't they? Or EQTech, yeah. Or however you want to pronounce it. Turned themselves into Forgent. These guys have turned them into Total Graphite, and hopefully they become Total Graphite now.
Mind you, with Energy Pathways, 60,000 tons at 10,000 tons per annum, who needs Total Graphite?
Yeah, 10,000 tons per or $10,000 per ton. Yeah, it would be handsome to say the least. So, yeah.
Let's see. Okay, Ben Klube, CEO of Energy Pathways. Welcome to Monday Upbeat Markets.
Hi there. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, no problem. So first of all, congratulations on winning a gas storage license from the North Sea Transition Authority. Probably took a little bit longer than expected, but you got there in the end.
Yes. Very pleased to get the award. So we can now move forward and progress with FEED for the project. And we're all steaming ahead now.
One of the things I noticed, Ben, is in the RNS last week, you'll be able to provide up to 6 days of natural energy supply, and the compressed air energy storage system is the largest long-duration energy storage facility in the UK. I mean, can you just elaborate more on that?
Yeah, so there's MESH is essentially two projects. There is long-duration energy storage, which is a form of electrical storage, and we're doing that using compressed air. And in its own right, the MESH long-duration energy storage project will be the UK's largest project by some distance. And then also the gas storage project will be very large as well, and it will be able to provide an additional 6 days of national stored supply for the UK energy system.
Very good. I mean, you've done this right under the noses of the majors. I mean, they must be fuming that they didn't get the license themselves. Do you expect, as a result of winning this, that there could be potentially corporate activity towards Energy Pathways and potentially taking you out?
Well, I think we're leading the way in a number of fronts about how to deliver energy storage for the UK energy system in a low cost and commercially viable way. And we're already getting interest in what we're doing. Let's say it wouldn't surprise me if that interest continued and increases from other areas.
So you say interest. I mean, you could come from a number of angles. I mean, you said in the RNS about not needing a government subsidy or very little government subsidy, but you know, I saw from ITM Power that because of their hydrogen capabilities, they got a government grant. Is grant funding available to you?
Yeah, grant funding is available. You'll probably have seen that GB Energy and Desners are actively seeking to support long-duration energy storage. It is a top priority for the UK energy system. It is essentially is critical in order to support the build-out of the renewable, largely wind-generating capability that is also being subsidised. So the UK is targeting to have 20 gigawatts of long-duration energy storage. It's effectively got next to none at the moment. And so it's a huge priority. It's a huge growth area.
So Ben, how does this unlock the value that you've been trying to build in Energy Pathways? I mean, first and foremost, I presume it means that you can actually get the gas out of the ground, because you obviously need to get the gas out of the ground, the gas storage. But tell us more about the value.
From a gas storage point of view, there's a market for gas storage capacity in the UK. The UK has effectively got next to no gas storage capability. It's got about 1/10 of that of Europe, of the EU, and so there's a big market for gas storage. And so we're looking to generate revenues from that demand. And I think that's really all been brought into sharper focus with this Middle Eastern war and showing up the dependency that the UK has for gas imports and in its reliance. So gas storage is a form of buffer to protect the UK's energy supply. From a long duration energy storage point of view, we're going to be a low cost supply, and the real game changer from a long duration energy storage market point of view is that we'll be providing days, not hours, of electrical storage capability. The long duration energy storage project's been contemplated in the initial round of government-backed LDES projects. You're talking hours, max 24 hours. We're talking 7+ days of storage capability, and that equals revenue. And really, in order to harness what is already billions being wasted on lost renewable generating capacity, i.e. wind farms get paid to shut down or switch off when wind is too abundant, and that's costing billions. You need days of storage in order to harness that. And that's what we're after, and that's where the value is.
Very good. So what are the next steps? What is going to be happening in the Energy Pathways world?
Well, we've launched into FEED for the project, and that's engineering works. It's environmental planning submissions. It is offtake negotiations and agreements for the project and financing for the development. And we've already kicked off all of those work streams, and we're targeting a final investment decision for 2028 with operational startup in 2031.
From the point of view of all of these big players that you've got involved, including Siemens in terms of the air pressure stuff, and also, you know, at the end of the day, that you've got companies like Centrica in the UK who have been the main provider of a lot of these things. I suppose it's the same question as Graham was pointing out to you. There's got to be some people who want to partner with you or take you out, one or the other.
Well, I think you've put the list of partners who are already actively working with us and supporting the project, and there's other companies that have also shown an interest in supporting the project too, or even in being involved in the project. So I think we're really building up momentum now, and you know, we look forward to working with all of our partners in taking the project forward.
Ben, I would imagine that the level of interest you've received from the private sector this time, from a funding point of view, because it's been significantly de-risked post the NSTA approval, would have increased. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, project's been de-risked. Obviously, there's further steps in the process to go through, as you appreciate. A key one from a long-duration energy storage perspective is our participation in the next, what's called the long-duration energy storage cap and floor round, which is run by Ofgem. And we've already initiated discussions with Ofgem about that, but they'll be launching that that program during the course of this year. And that involvement in that process, I think, is another trigger and signal for further private capital investment and interest.
Ben, where does this leave us with the graphite project as well?
Yeah, that's all moving along as well. Graphite is a critical part of the industrial and growth strategy of the UK government, being a critical mineral. And we're getting a lot of interest from the government about what we're doing in that. So that's moving along in the background. And we think our form of our approach to producing hydrogen remains very competitive relative to, say, green hydrogen or blue hydrogen solutions that are being looked at by others.
We're going to have rainbow hydrogen soon, I think. anyway, you talked previously about the relationship with Siemens, especially, that Siemens weren't just looking for one opportunity, i.e. the Marron project. Can you see within 2026 an expansion either around the UK or somewhere else that you're going to basically copy and paste the situation?
Yeah, look, in short, we've got a global cooperation agreement with Siemens Energy around our compressed air storage system and the modular design that we've worked up with them. Do we see growth potential? Absolutely. Even though our long-duration energy storage project is going to be the UK's largest, we can do that this many times, and the growth potential for long duration energy storage is huge. So if you sort of picture this, our system is 300 megawatts. The government is seeking 20 gigawatts of long duration energy storage. We're not even scratching the surface. We're the biggest. We can do it multiple times. Even within our license area that we've just been awarded, but we also see growth potential or other places we can apply this technology with Siemens Energy elsewhere in the UK as well as in Europe.
So the government basically needs this a ton loads of times, basically. I mean, if you're saying 20 gigawatts, that's like 60 times what you're likely to produce.
Yes, and you know, sort of repeat the comment I made. Having days of storage capability is key here for harnessing all the renewable generating capacity that is being added into the system. So if you you know, the UK is essentially increasing its wind generate capacity threefold by 2030. So there is a huge amount of generating capacity where wind energy is essentially going to be lost. The government's own estimates estimate the cost of balancing the grid is going to increase to $8 billion, which gets added onto consumer bills. That's the sort of size of the prize we're looking at here.
Yeah, and when you say balancing the situation, what you really mean is that the government has already agreed to buy this stuff. And if we can't keep it, then it's stuff, basically. It has to pay for it anyway.
It's being paid for. $8 billion is being paid for in consumer bills. and it's getting something for that wasted money.
Yeah. So by storing it, then we use less coal, gas, whatever other uses we have in the days preceding it, as long as we can maintain that storage. That's basically what happens.
Yeah, exactly. So you take that, essentially that wasted wind, which is lost, and we store it when its value is effectively zero, and then we dispatch it into the electricity market when renewables are less available, and the cost of our supply is very competitive. So when the wind doesn't blow or the sun doesn't shine, in effect, UK's relies on gas power gen systems to provide electricity. That is very expensive, and gas-fired power generation, in effect, sets the price for all electricity in the UK. So it's no great surprise that the UK has got some of the highest electricity prices in the world. So if we can supply our dispatchable stored energy into the grid, we essentially will be displacing that expensive electricity, and ultimately that leads to reducing electricity prices across the board.
And location matters in this situation, I presume, because if there's lots of wind storage or not storage, there's lots of wind energy being produced in Scotland. Effectively, you want to store that somewhere in and around Scotland to then provide the energy to Scotland, I presume. You're not going to be shipping energy all the way down to the northwest of England, or alternatively southern England. You need these storage places in and around the area the energy is going to be used. Is that fair to say or not?
Yeah, it's fair to say. So the location of the storage mass is relative to where it sits within the grid and where the renewable generating centres are within the UK. And as you've rightly described, much of the wind generating capability is in Scotland or the north of England, either onshore or offshore. So where you want to store the that excess wind energy, there's good places to do it. And in our case, our location is optimal because we sit between two major grid constraint boundaries in the UK system, which are called the B6 and the B7A. The B6 runs along the England-Scotland border. The B7A runs essentially east-west, north of Manchester type area. And it's a great location to harness excess wind generating capability. And then we can dispatch into the market, the load centers of the south, when renewables is not available. So getting storage locations which are optimal for harnessing the renewable generating capability is a key part of getting things set up in the most effective way.
Yeah, and I mean the scenario with the EPP, now you have this license, give people an idea of the quantum that this could actually produce in revenues. Okay, it's 4 years away, but what sort of quantum are we talking about? From the gas storage, from actually taking the gas out of the ground, from the earth situation with Siemens, and also with the graphite?
Yeah, so, well, just sort of do the electrical generating capability. We're talking hundreds of millions per annum capability here. We can play in multiple electricity markets within the UK that are available to us, ranging from the sort of standard wholesale type market to markets called the balancing mechanism, capacity markets. And these are all growing markets needed to ensure a resilient grid, and we can support those. And also growing markets, which are called ancillary services, which are really about grid stabilization, inertia. And because we're essentially a turbine driven system, we can play in all of those markets too. You might recall back last year when in Spain, France, Portugal, as blackouts, much of that was due to lack of inertia capability in a renewables dominated grid. So the services that we provide are high value services that are essential for ensuring a secure and resilient renewables dominated electricity system.
Very good. And from the point of view of the revenues that we expect from the graphite and from also the air compression thing, what are we talking about? Are we the same magnitude?
Potentially more. So from a graphite point of view, at the moment we're targeting looking at a 60,000 tons per annum plant, and if we are to be successful in achieving high grade graphite type qualities out of the plant, the current price for graphite is somewhere in the order of $10,000 a ton. So talking hundreds of millions of revenue potential just in that area alone.
Okay, Ben, I want to talk to you more on the financials now. So the ATM facility that you announced a few weeks ago, I know this isn't the case, but I've read that some investors think that your reference price in the ATM of 5.93p is the price that the ATM facilities received the shares at. Can you explain to listeners how the ATM facility works?
Yeah, the ATM facility is unrelated to the reference price that you're just talking about. It is equity that the company may issue, and it would be issued at the market price on the day. The company is in control about if and when it issues equity through this facility, but it's a facility that is available to us, and we'll use it in the way that is what we think is the best, represents the best value to the company's shareholders.
I mean, from where the way I read it, and my interpretation is the ATM facility sells the shares that you issue to them at the market price. They send 95% of those proceeds to Energy Pathways, and they keep 5%. Is that roughly how it works?
Yeah,
good stuff. Okay. Are you surprised, given the magnitude of the news last week, that it hasn't gone higher than 10 pence?
Look, the value of the projects that that we're doing here are huge. So we're very undervalued relative to the asset values that that these projects represent, which are effectively de-risked. There's no, call it, exploration component to this. There's no appraisal component to this. This is, we're into the taking the project forward, completing the engineering and getting the government approvals and so on for the development consent. We consider the project significantly de-risked, and we have access to significant value for shareholders, not just within these assets, but also the growth potential represented by the license. If you think about it this way, the compressed air storage project, long duration energy storage project, we require four caverns for that project, and to be the UK's largest LDES project. We've got the capability of constructing 60 salt caverns within this license area. So it's a modular system. We can repeat this. The market is huge. It's barely being scratched, as I was explaining before. 20 gigawatts of LDES is needed by the UK. We think we're on track really to build a lot of value into this company.
And in terms of news flow between now and Christmas, what can investors look forward to?
Oh, you'll see progress as we go through building out the engineering of the project, bringing in new partners in various forms into the project, participation in the LDES cap and floor round when the government or Ofgem launches that. Various milestones from a engineering, commercial and financing and offtake perspective on the project.
So Ben, my last question is you obviously got these things in place now. What is the situation about building out the management team with the Energy Pathways? Because if you are going to be this multi-billion pound company by the looks of these revenues, you're going to need a bigger, at least, much more experienced management team.
Well, we've got a very experienced management team already. Much of the engineering for these projects that we're looking at is it's North Sea offshore engineering. We have a team that is highly experienced with many years of capability delivering projects and big projects of such scale. And we're applying our expertise to essentially the energy transition arena here. Now, obviously, we're not going to do everything ourselves. We're going to be bringing in, as I've already mentioned, you've seen some of the names that we've already involved in our project, like Siemens Energy, Wood Group, Costain, so major engineering houses who are going to support us in taking these projects forward. Through to the FID milestone, and we'll be making some further announcements about other partners coming into the project to support us.
Very good. Well, it's fabulous news. We've been waiting for I don't know how long, but I'm just looking at my watch here and seeing how that I don't have on my wrist. So it's been a wait, but I think now you've got the ducks lined up. And we're looking forward to them all going quack, and we make some more.
Thank you.
Christian Dennis, Non-Executive Director of Total Graphite and Head of Corporate Broking at Optiva Securities. Welcome to Monday Upbeat Markets.
Welcome, Graham. Good to see you.
Yeah.
Another nice morning.
Another nice morning, absolutely. Yeah. Now, I know you're somewhat limited in what you can say as an NED of Total Graphite, but
absolutely,
try the best you can.
So
for people that don't know anything about Total Graphite, formerly was known as Tiruparti Graphite, can you give us a quick synopsis?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And thanks for inviting me on, Graham. I've been looking forward to this. So I will, as you say, I'll try to answer within my remit as an NED. Total Graphite, which formerly Tiruparti Graphite, was set up to build an integrated upstream and downstream graphite business, and the basis of that was to take advantage of the growth in graphite demand in the EV space, electrification, and energy transition. So that was the thesis and behind the company, and we have built a mining operation in Madagascar, currently in production, and our focus now is on building a sustainable consistent production there in Madagascar. We do also have an operation a project in Mozambique as well, which is for longer term development. So that's where we are at the moment.
Okay, and then just going on to your Madagascan assets, so you've got Vatamina, which is operating mine, you've got Sahamami, which is in development. What's the status quo with these projects? And give us an idea, like going forward, what the production profiles will look like and over what time frames?
Yeah, we've got the two projects in Madagascar, as you say, Vatamina. Vatamina is now back in production following the financing that we did late last year, which completed earlier this year. That's given us the working capital now to put Vatamina back into production. And we are up and running. We are producing and shipping product there. The capacity for Vatamina is 18,000 tons per annum. and we'll be looking to build towards that capacity level, you know, over the a reasonable time frame from where we are at the moment. Once we get that to that level on a consistent basis, then we'd look to bring the San Mamani project into production as well. That has the capacity to do a further 18,000 tons per annum. So, you know, the combined operations would give us 36,000 tons of annual production from Madagascar when they'd be both operating at full capacity.
That's a sizable amount. I mean, what yeah. just on the selling the raw material itself. What prices would you be expected to fetch for that in today's pricing?
Well, we've looked at the graphite in Madagascar has a lot of the larger jumbo flake, as I think you appreciate. So you've got a range of graphite there, and the pricing works that the larger jumbo flake gets a more premium price in the market. It goes into more specialist applications, and then you get the finer graphite, which is the smaller flake, which is has a lesser price. And then so depending on the mix of graphite that you have, you get a basket price. And I think the company announced recently that our basket pricing is coming in at around $850-ish dollars, US dollars per ton as our basket. And, you know, if the jumbo flake can sell for, you know, that can sell for $1,200, $1,300 a ton, then the smaller flake, the finer flake, you know, obviously it could be sort of 600, something like that. So there's a sort of range that you're working in. So depending on your mix, you get your basket price. And that's where we're sort of sitting in that at the moment.
So, I mean, like, let's say going forward in 2 years' time, and hopefully San Mamani is up and running, you've got 36,000 tons of production. Okay, you're going to be looking at, I know, roughly $32 million of revenue. Is that right?
Yeah. Something like that. I mean, I think, can we get to full capacity? I think we would hope to get to that full capacity level. But yeah, so I think $30 million ish revenue line is a fair number to look at. Yeah.
And margins wise, what are you looking at profit margin wise?
The profit margins, well, it's really varies with terms of the amount of production that you're doing, your operating costs. But you know, we'd certainly be looking at a high margin from what our production levels are. I mean, the higher your production levels, it's all about operating economies of scale. So, you know, we'd want to build that up to a really pretty good margin, actually.
Okay. But you're talking, what, minimum 50%, I'm assuming, you know, on the base level and then higher. Is that a fair assumption?
I think I don't think we've disclosed exactly what our operating margins are at the moment. I think we need to wait and see how things sort of pan out over the coming months, really. But yeah, I mean, it's a business where when the plants are operating on a consistent basis, you can get a good margin. I wouldn't want to say exactly what it is, but it's going to be a good margin.
Yeah, and to be fair, whenever you build a mine or get started up, margins tend to be not ideal to start with, and then they get better and better as you optimize. I guess for me, Christian, the question is obviously that there's quite a few graphite stocks on the market. There's Blencow Resources also in Africa. Green Rock, Sovereign Metals obviously has a massive, massive graphite deposit. And I guess the question is, what's the USP here for Total Graphite, as in for people looking to invest in graphite stocks? What makes this one, you know, worthy of investment within the portfolio over potentially others?
Yeah, it's a good question, and I think we've got a pretty good answer to that, which is the fact that, you know, Tirupati, Total Graphite, I should say, we've been around for a few years. We've actually built a plant. Actually, we've got two plants in Madagascar. One of them is operational. And the other one we would plan longer term to bring bring into production. So that's really our USP. We are actually a producing graphite mining company. We have an international sales network that we've established, and we are, you know, selling to in a real world environment. We're not talking about building a mine. We're talking about how we're going to finance it. We've already financed the construction and development of the mining operation. Yeah. And that puts us in a very strong position when we're sitting in the room with off-takers, buyers, financiers, that they can see that, you know, we are actually a mining company.
And you're past that bit of the curve, maybe.
And as we scale our operations up, we've already got the established network, so we can, you know, the whole, you know, thesis of the company was to build our production into a increasing market for graphite, both right across the spectrum of graphite products. And as we do that, you know, we're confident with the network that we built that, you know, we'll be able to feed our graphite into those markets. We did announce earlier this year that we're into talks with an offtake partner. Those talks are ongoing, and these are you know significant players in the graphite space who coming to us because they know that we can actually supply product.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, with graphite, that there's not too many players out there who are offtakers. So if you secure an offtake agreement, it tends to be quite a big name just because of the way the market operates. I think, Tirupati in its former life, now Total Graphite, obviously there were legacy issues. Those now seem to all be cleared up. And it seems to be now the case you're trying to market it as the fundamental proposition of what you now have in the company is just way in excess of the market cap, and those legacy issues are sorted. You say that's accurate?
Yeah, I mean, we've done a lot of restructuring for the company over the last 12 months. As we've effectively refinanced the company, we've put in a lot of operational controls now, a lot more financial discipline in the company. So, you know, it's a completely new business in that sense. A new management team there, you know, running the business. So much more of a realistic plan to build the business, focus on the main Batamina plant, achieve sustainable production there with a lot of financial discipline, managing our costs there, and then use that as the platform to build the business from a much stronger financial footing now. So yeah, I mean, it's been a turnaround. I mean, you have to say, well, okay, that's great. I mean, that we have to do that now. I mean, we put all the building blocks in place in terms of the finances, the management team, to achieve our objectives. Now we need to go out and do that, and we're definitely on track to do that from where we are at the moment.
And then, in addition, obviously, last one for me, I'll hand back to Graham.
Yeah,
the trading business had an RNS a couple of weeks ago. It's making a fair bit of money. You know, obviously, it's kind of proof of concept still stage. But this is actually becoming more and more common, particularly I've noticed across African explorers and producers. It seems to be that trading, you know, the idea is that you generate enough cash to cover all your working capital costs on a corporate level. And then the assets that you have, the production, that's just pure profit. Is that the idea there, or do you have bigger
plans? The trading business is an opportunity for Total Graphite to basically utilize its the network. And this is another one of our USPs. We've built up a network of contacts internationally over the years. So we're now in a position to act as a trader of graphite products through our network. And that's what we're doing here. And we are, we're now trading higher purity graphite products across our sales network. And that's giving us exposure to large markets in the EV electrification energy transition space, which is great for us because these are significant markets that we can now trade into. So as well as actually producing our own graphite, you know, we're now trading these products globally as well through our network, which can scale could scale significantly for the company. Yeah, with requires no capital input from us actually to do that.
Yeah, it's interesting because obviously you have the production side, you have the trading side. There's cash in the bank. You have new management, and I think the only thing you're really missing is sentiment more than anything else. maybe that's not particularly fair, but it almost kind of needs that kind of jump start, doesn't it, in the market? I mean, you've been in the markets for a very long time. It does need that kind of flavor of the week kind of thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I look, you know, we are a mining company, as I said, and a trading company. We've got you know, long-term aspirations. We've made you know, a couple of announcements last week, which you might want to discuss more, but which sort of shows our longer-term aspirations as a company. But the, you know, the fundamental place where we are at the moment is building that consistent and sustainable production from our operations. And I think as we move through that process over the coming months and demonstrate to the market that we are able to achieve that, then I think that does put the company in a very good place, actually. And I think our credibility with investors will improve significantly. So I sort of get where investors are based on the, you know, the history of the company over the last few years, that you know, they want to see us you know, achieve what we stated we want to do.
Yeah, I think it's that sort of, you set out a timeline, and then once you, if you start hitting those I don't want to say deadlines, but if you start doing exactly what you said you're going to do in the time frame that you've set out, then the credibility will shoot up, and then the share price will as well.
Yeah, that's the dream, right? That's the dream, and that's where we're heading. And it's the platform that allows the company to then push on. And we've got, you know, great asset portfolio there with the, you know, with Atamina now in production, but we've got the optionality of the San Mamani project. There are three licenses that we are in the application process that are adjacent to the San Mamani plant. We're hoping to get those awarded to the company over the coming months. That will give San Mamani potentially a long life operation. So that's all to look forward to further down the line. And then we've got the Mozambique assets, which are very important assets for the company. They are scale assets. There's two projects there, both advanced development stage. And, you know, we're now in the process of reviewing the studies that were carried out on those projects historically, and we will be looking at you know, how they fit into a longer term development plan for the company to maximize the value for shareholders.
Sorry, Graham, I just thought of one more actually, because I was thinking about Greenrock, and obviously their Amitsoq, their project in Greenland, European strategic project status, Blegal, you know, DFC funding, US Development Finance Corporation, Sovereign Metals, there, very large graphite deposit, obviously huge institutional World Bank, IFC support. There's not particularly many producing graphite mines out there. And graphite, you know, despite maybe not being the most sexy of minerals, God help me for using that phrase, it still is a critical mineral. There still is demand for it, you know, across the world. I mean, do you think there could be potential institutional interest, government funding, takeover potential here, or do you think it's too early days for those kind of talks?
Well, I think with regards to, you're talking about sort of government funding agencies, sort of the IFC, European agencies.
Yeah, the DFC, the European.
The UK. Yeah. I mean, the UK has got I think it's 7.8 billion pounds of funding available for, you know, key projects in the UK. They set up the UK Growth Fund or whatever to do that. I mean, that's just the UK. I mean, and they're the guys that put the money into Cornish Metals. I think they put £30 million into Cornish Metals. They want, you know, you've got groups, you know, European agencies now that have got funding. They want to see development of supply chains ex-China. So that's Europe. You've got the DIFC in the US, which is which has supported, they've supported Syrah in a huge way, and they put money into Blenko. Now, that non-recourse loan was, and they went right down to the feasibility study stage, which is, you know, that's an unusual to see these funding agencies moving down like that. And then Green Rock as well. So yeah, I mean, the we that's something for us in the future. And with the assets that we've got, you know, we may well be, you know, looking to have those conversations. And as we want to develop those, build a, you know, integrated financing packages for those projects, which would involve government funding, debt, institutional investors, and then off-takers. We can build some pretty exciting financing opportunities for the company, actually, by doing that, or even bringing in joint venture partners, potentially, whatever we think will create the most value. But the opportunity is there across all of those at the moment.
Very good. Now, talking about financing, back in December, you did the 1.5p placing, and you converted a lot of liabilities into equity. Has that cleared up your balance sheet? Is there no debt left now with Total Graphite, or is there some debt left?
There was the refinancing, placing, and then the relisting allowed the loan notes that were outstanding to be predominantly to be converted into equity, all at the same price. So that significantly cleaned up the company's balance sheet. There is one small piece of debt now left, which was rolled forward to mid 2027. But the, you know, from where the balance sheet was pre the listing to where it is now, you know, we're in a much stronger position.
Okay. Would you say you have enough cash in the bank balance to take Total Graphite to cash flow positivity, or do you think you'll need a little bit of assistance along the way?
Well, I mean, I think the company's plans are to move the Batamina plant into a position where we've got consistent, sustainable production, when that will achieve, you know, a positive cash flow position for the company. From where the company is at the moment, we'll continually review all our financing options as we scale up the operations going forward. And I think that's the position of the company at the moment.
Yeah. And what about the situation in the Middle East, getting hold of oil and other materials that you need to enable production? Are you being affected by that?
I think like all companies, all international companies, were keeping a close eye on what's been happening in the Middle East and how that's going to affecting the company's logistics, shipping, and energy costs. It's something that we're looking at. In terms of the actual operation, I mean, the Batamina plant is operating, we are producing graphite, we are shipping, and we are, we're in business, but we're obviously reviewing everything, on a day-to-day basis, really. I mean, hopefully, you know, things are going to start settling down a bit.
Yeah, good. Now, you've announced a new CEO, Aaron Somami, as the CEO of Total Graphite. I know nothing about him. Could you give us a little bit of a bio about this chap? What's he achieved in the past?
Yeah, well, I mean, Aaron Somami was brought into the company. You know, I think we felt we needed some financial discipline and operational discipline. So, you know, Aaron, you know, came in as our new CEO to sort of provide that at this point in the company's development. We thought that was a prudent thing for us to do. I mean, Aaron's got a background in trading. He's built a trading business in Dubai, so very very experienced business manager, and he's absolutely perfect for where the company is at the moment. So we're pleased to have him on board.
What sort of holding does he have in the company? What's his incentive as such, apart from salary?
Yeah, well, I mean the inland global group which Aaron's connected to, have invested into TG, into TG Total Graphite. So yeah, that obviously there's a connection there, and certainly got a big incentive to help the company, move through this phase.
Okay. And then just one question that's burning in my head is about Mozambique, That's one that's been sort of running in the background for probably at least 7 years, I would have thought. What's the plan with that? Do you think you'll actually take that into full development, subject to the interpretation of these results, but do you think you'll take that into production, or is this something you'll flip and sell it on?
Well, yeah, right. I mean, the Mozambique assets were actually... We finally signed off on that deal in March 2023, actually. I mean, the company, it took about a year and a half for that deal to conclude. So it's been, it was a long time going through that sell purchase agreement, but finally signed off in 2023. And they are significant assets for the company. You've got two projects there that are have been taken a long way down the development line. I mean, Montepuez has got completed feasibility. It's got, it's permitted for around 100,000 tons of production a year. And, we've got the study, the upstream study, and we also have the anode material study that was carried out on that project as well. So, material assets with material value for the company. I think we announced last week the two that we were going to dust down both of those studies and review them. And then I think the board will look at the optimum development strategy for both of those assets. I mean, and just to say that's a longer term. Our primary focus is on getting production going on Vat Amina. I don't want to be just too distracted, run too fast on these things, but they are significant assets. And yeah, how we do it, how we fund it, whether it's through a joint venture or ourselves, we'll just see. It's all about just optimizing the value for shareholders. But what we do know is that they are material assets that sit within the Total Graphite portfolio, and we will do what we can to absolutely maximize the value for our shareholders from those assets. And if we can do that well, and we can create a lot of value for our shareholders over the long period.
All right. Now, thank you for talking about Total Graphite PLC. I just want you now to get your other hat on, your Optiva hat on.
Yeah.
And talk about your NAPs. But can I, first of all, you were the broker that brought Energy Pathways to the market. You did the pre-IPO, you did the IPO. Energy Pathways is a very topical stock right now. What do you have to say about last week's news?
Well, it's very exciting news for Energy Pathways. I mean, they have when we brought the company to the market, they had the Marram gas field, which they wanted to bring into production, and which is this is a whole UK energy security story there, which Energy Pathways is very much sort of providing solutions to, and then they have developed the story with the mesh project now, which is going to be, it's now got UK support to bring in this integrated energy project here. And the announcement last week that they've now got the licenses for energy storage really builds into that, and that for the UK's position at the moment as having hardly any energy storage capacity, which is pretty shocking. Energy Pathways are now offering a solution to that, so it's pretty exciting. I mean, the value of these projects are significant. So I'm very pleased that they're moving forward, and successful listing. We did the pre-IPO, I think it's
3.2
wasn't it? And so where are they today? 11p or something today, so it's great.
Yeah. Yeah, no, well done. It's taking its time, but we got there in the end.
Well, I think it's all these things, isn't it? You have to be a, you know, patience is the investor's best friend. I think one of Warren Buffett's many quips, and it's true.
I'm sure Charles will have a lot to say about Energy Pathways. He's been following it a long time, haven't you, Charles?
Well, Energy Pathways and Warren Buffett. Yeah, well, I think the Section 35, I think, was inevitable. And then once you have that, the license was inevitable, the gas storage. So, you know, I think now you've got the license, the ability to command, you know, different, potentially better financing in the future is there. But for me, it's always been about gas storage. And you know, as you said, Christian, you know, most countries across Europe have months of gas storage and we have a week and a half. And that is genuinely the bottom line. I think everything else is kind of, you know, it's lovely and it generates a significant amount of revenue. But that's what makes the story, you know, strategically important to the UK. And it really is as simple as that. Now they have the license. I think it'll hit the mainstream news very quickly. And then when it does, you know, away we go. Warren Buffett, it was funny because buy when others are fearful and, you know, sell when people are being greedy.
Yeah,
he has. And Warren Buffett and Rick Rule, actually, in the resource space, they're both kind of the same thing, is that they talk a really big game, you know, about you know, being, you know, a little bit risk averse, being careful with money. And obviously, once you've made your capital, you can. But both Warren and Rick, when they were younger and getting started, they made a lot of bets in kind of quite risky stocks to generate their capital initially. If you look at their actual history, it was the smaller stuff where they saw like serious fundamental value versus the market cap. And then it's only now that they have so much money that they can't really buy into much without moving those stocks that they've changed their tune a little bit.
You know, Warren Buffett is, if you sort of study him, you know, now he's like, you know, is he playing in these, you know, huge stocks. But yeah, you know, when he started off, you know, he had a bit of a corporate raider mentality, you know, where he would, you know, buy stakes in companies and hustle. You know, he got into that Geico insurance, you know, he hustled into that, and he was the sort of guy that in the boardroom, you know, if you found out on the grapevine that Warren was buying your stock, you'd expect a call from him at some point where he'd want to sit down with you and talk turkey. So he was a little bit of a hustler and very nice guy, but he knew more about your business than you did, which was a sort of unnerving thing. Other people.
Well, I think it's the fun game as well, right? Like if you're on the retail side of things, like I am, right? If you've got like 30, 40 grand to invest in a stock, like Great Western Mining, for example, you can get into that, you know, and when the share price shoots up as it has, or Kendrick Resources, another one, or Delta Gold, then you can buy into these stories at the beginning with a fair chunk of capital and make a huge percentage return. Whereas if you're investing with hundreds of thousands or millions, when you're buying those shares, you're the one that pushes up the share price, and if you try and sell, you're going to drop it down immediately afterwards as well. And what's quite fun is when, you know, Guardian Metal Resources is a good example of one I've covered, or, you know, Greatland Resources, Greatland Gold as well, is where they go from that kind of penny stock explorer to, you know, a massive giant company. Where it becomes those kind of bigger play stocks, where the institutions get involved. And a really funny thing is where you kind of get, where it gets to a market capitalization, where you get to the point where you think, wow, actually, you know, my shareholding is kind of nothing. It makes no difference if I sold, like, it wouldn't barely affect the register at all. And that's the dream, right? That's where everyone wants to get to. And maybe Total Graphite will get there in the next few years.
Well, interestingly, we're starting to see now hedge fund, well-known hedge fund names, such as Greg Coffey, who was a legend in the commodities trading market. He used to work for Louis Bacon, is now becoming quite active in the becoming active in the small cap UK small cap space. Mm. I think that might be a taste of things to come.
Well, we had the institutional support for the placing we did, which earlier in the year, and you know, we did have one very well-known UK small cap fund manager came in First investment into Total Graphite, which was good. And so, yeah, I mean, it's encouraging that you're starting to see that interest.
Who was that, Christian? Who was that? Can you say?
I can't actually say it.
He's not going to say it. He would have if he could, couldn't he?
But it's a well-known name, and it was just good to see, you know. So, yeah.
I think, it's more and more people are, I say people, like institutions, family offices, smaller funds are looking at the resource space, but they're also looking at where there's value, right? And the value is to be found in London on AIM. That's where the value is. And it's as simple as that. And when you look for a good way, people understand that concept of diversification in a portfolio. If you look at the AI stocks, right, the large caps, so many of them, in my mind, are so horrendously overvalued. When the crash comes, it'll be really brutal. Where is some of that money going to flood? It's going to flood into things that have fundamental value. And, you know, so the small caps take a beating initially, but then I think a lot of money, it'll be like the pandemic. They'll all drop drastically and then they're going to shoot up because people are going to want to back things that have real assets, hard assets, cash in the bank, which is a little bit different, you know?
And I think, you know, we've been through the horrendous, bear market in UK small caps. I mean, it lasted 3.5 years, January. I think technically it was from January 22 to about May, June 25, which was pretty awful. I mean, it's longer than the global financial crisis bear market in small caps, which is a relatively short period, actually, before they recovered. So it's been a tough time. So we're not even a year into a really recovery in the smaller company market. I mean, you'd expect that phase to last for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, let's see. But, there's a lot more value to come from the small cap market. I think we're just in the early stages of that. You're seeing a few of these little companies popping up here or there, but nothing on a broad scale yet.
No, we shall see, obviously. But I think it's kind of inevitable. I mean, there are stocks, right? Parramatta Resources is a good example, but we can name sort of 7 or 8 others that at points in the past year have had more cash, physical cash in the bank than their market capitalizations. Do you know? So at some point, it has to recorrect.
That's crazy, isn't it? Yeah, well, I mean, there was a few like that. What was that one? One of those... the companies who went into the digital asset guys, yeah. There's a few of those that are trading close to the thing. But anyway, I was going to mention, Graham, talking about, our
your naps.
Companies.
Yeah.
They're just one, really. They came out with an announcement this morning, which was quite opportune, which was the Panther Metals guys. I think that's an interesting company because that's one of these, recycling of tailings, which is reprocessing of tailings, which is an interesting area because you're seeing the technology developing, the metallurgical technology developing on for being able to extract metals from tailings. And as that's developing, some of these projects are starting to look quite attractive economically, and I think Panthers came out this morning with the assay results. They've got a tailings project in Canada, the Winston Lake project, and they're basically drilling into that now, and they're getting a consistency across the resource. And I think they've only got a small market value at the moment. Let's see where they go. But I think some of the companies like that are quite interesting in a critical mineral space. They've got gallium in their tailings, which is it's a high value product, goes into the semiconductor industry, and it could attract a bit of interest.
Is that what Altona has? Gallium,
Altona's is quite interesting as well, because that's another company that we actually listed back in 2023.
It's got a great ticker, Altona.
Yeah, but it's actually developing quite interesting, because it's got now developing on a parallel path with the Monte Muembe project in Mozambique, which is the rare earth project. And it sort of stalled a little bit because the feasibility study didn't come up with quite as positive results as they would have hoped. So it stalled a little bit. They've now got US government funding to go and do some more test work on that, which they're quite excited about. But at the same time, they're now developing the fluorspar and gallium projects. And yeah, they can be, the statement I think last week was saying that the fluorspar could be, if they were to get the go ahead on that project, that could be put into production relatively quickly. You know, on mining terms, could be, you know, I think he said from decision to mine, it could be, you know, 12 months to production, because it's basically, you know, digging it up and processing it. So that looked quite, and they've got the gallium as well, which is, and they're going to be, I think they're saying they're going to be one of the few companies that's actually going to publish a mineral resource estimate for a gallium project, which is pretty unique. So I think Altona's worth keeping an eye on, actually, because there's quite a lot of value.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because you say that you've got to get the mining. I mean, majority of Winston Lake and Panther, you know, assuming it's all economically viable, it's tailings. You know, it's already been blown up, shaken about, just having to put it through like a pretty basic plant, and you'll get what you want out of that with no real problems. I mean, I haven't spoken to Darren in probably about a year, actually, but he was quite excited when that project came on, and I think it's just a case of the market has to see that it's the right timing for it. Altona, the same for US funding. I mean, Mcango that I invested in 2 or 3 years ago, I mean, like, it went down and down and down, and I basically put shares at the bottom drawer and forgot about them, because it just doesn't seem to be working. And then they absolutely shot up over the past year, and I've made a significant amount of profit. And I think sometimes you can be right about a company, and the share price just falls anyway because it's just not the right timing. But when it recovers, it can be very rapid. And I think in the case of both Panther and Altona, it's just the right time for both of those stocks in this market, particularly with the gallium in the tailings. It's also a jurisdiction. Canada is, you know, a place where the US will happily invest because it's right next door to them. Versus, you know,
they're going to be
in Africa.
Yeah, and I was going to say they're going to be listing. Panther are going to be listing on the Canadian market over the next couple of months. So it's going to be interesting, because they're going to get exposure to US North American investors. So we'll see what happens there.
Well, I mean, if you look at sort of GMET, for example, you know, they listed on the OTC, you know, and again, it's basically very similar in terms of exposure, and it took a long time for the US liquidity to come. And they recently did a US, you know, a full US listing. But often you do that sort of Canadian US listing, you don't get much liquidity at all, and then it all comes at once in one go, simply because, you know, the company kind of gets to the it takes a while for American investors to know of the story, and then they tend to arrive at the big bunch. So I reckon that's probably what will happen there, but we shall see.
Okay.
Sorry, Christian. What other deals have you got going at the moment that you can talk about? Is there anything you're up to, or is it quiet?
We are looking at a IPO for a shell company, Panina Resources, which is that's the same team that were behind Blenko, Alchemy Capital, Emerson, you know, Sam Quinn, Cameron Pierce. They want to bring another company to the market. And they're raising some capital at the moment, and the idea is that they'll look to do an RTO or make some strategic investments with that and develop that. So I think that's quite interesting. Big focus there on critical minerals and mining, which is their expertise. And I went through the numbers, actually, looking at this, and you know, Alchemy listed at a pound and went up to 445p as a high. I know you're backing that one, Graham, which is great. And yeah. Emerson came on at 3p and went to 9.9, I think, and Blenko 3p being to 12. So, you know, I think these guys do know how to create value. You have to, once again, you have to be a bit patient with them, but they know how to do it. So we're working with them. And yeah, that's about it. I've got a few private things that I'm working on. I won't go into that on this call, but we're pretty busy.
And what's the best way if you know people want to tune into your views or get in touch with you? How what's the best way without
giving? Yeah, they can drop me an email on my go onto our website, get my details off there. You know, look at the Optiva news flow coming through, and I'm always accessible. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Kevin Hornsby's not on this call, but he always likes to ask this question. I've changed it a little bit. So Keir Starmer, he's looked at your capital gains and he thinks you weigh way too much money, and he thinks he's going to put you to death. The executioner comes up to you and says, "What's your last meal? What's it going to be?"
My last meal. Oh my gosh. Well, it's going to have to be a very good steak, I think, and a very nice bottle of red wine, and a huge dessert.
going down with the Titanic,
I won't have to worry about my waistline, will I? So, hopefully that doesn't happen. Yeah.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever received, and what's the best piece of advice you think you've given others?
I'm really sort of simplistic, I suppose, when it comes to stock advice. I think it's protect the downside. You know, look at the downside when you're investing, and if things aren't working, then cut. You know, the first cut's the best cut. You know, I learned that, I think, from about the first week when I started stockbroking, and I think anyone who applies that mantra to their investing strategy will save themselves losing a lot of money, hoping that things that aren't working miraculously start working. Yeah,
so well, it's not easy if you're a 10% shareholder in something in a small.
No, it's not easy. And I know, I'm someone who has not always done that, but I think that's a good bit of advice. And then a bit of advice that I always give is, you know, exactly the other side of the same coin is, you know, run your winners. And, you know, the people who really make the big money in the market are not the guys that, you know, trade the market every day and take a little clip here and a clip there and then get battered when something doesn't work and then wonder why they haven't made any money. When if they had done the absolute opposite to that and cut their small losses when they appeared and left their winners alone, they would have made significantly more money.
I can say I received that advice from you, Christian, back in the day. Remember, you looked at me and you said, "Run your winners, Graham," and you were right. We had a lot of success, didn't we, Christian?
Yeah, huge. Yeah, you know, I mean, like huge. Lots of 10 baggers. We had 100 bagger in there we had multiple 10 baggers and 5 baggers. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and taking out, you know, 10%, 20% on those, I mean, how much money would have been left on the table? Huge. So,
huge.
Yeah, definitely. That is an important thing. And then you can refine all the nuances of investing around that. But I think, you know, those are probably the two key principles that are going to stand any investor in pretty good stead.
All right, brilliant. Christian, thank you so much for coming on to Monday Upbeat Markets. Been a pleasure to have you on. Best of luck with Total Graphite and with all your investments at Optiva. Yeah,
been a pleasure, Graham. Good stuff. And nice to talk to you, Charles. Really appreciate it.
Likewise, Christian.
Thank you. Bye. All the best.
Well, Charles, that was an interesting viewpoint from Christian on Total Graphite. What do you think?
Yeah, indeed, a refreshed outlook, and also quite nice to see hear his opinions on Optiva, and perhaps the better outlook for the small cap market in general.
Yeah, they're quite optimistic. I think he was talking about maybe been for 3 or 4 good years after being in a probably one of the biggest bear markets that we've known in the small cap space for since day started.
Well, I think when the bull market ends and everyone's made loads of money and then it comes crashing back down again, because that's the way small caps go in a few years' time, when they hit rock bottom, just remember that the bull market comes back again. But it's very funny, isn't it? We see this every day in the markets. When a share price is kind of racing away to record highs, everyone's happy to buy it. But when it's kind of at the very lows, for whatever reason, nobody wants to hedge it at all. Do you know?
Talking about companies that were unfashionable that have suddenly become very fashionable, I think you're involved in one of them, maybe two of them.
What, at least three or four.
Yeah. but one beginning with the letter K.
Kendrick Resources. Yeah. I mean, that pivot into rare earths. I mean, the RNS came out today, 40 million tons of high-grade surface mineralization, DEM survey. And volumetric assessment, grades ranging from 2.2% to over 7% TREO, placing it among the highest grade rare earth projects globally. Now, obviously, this is early days, but you're talking tens of billions of dollars of minerals, metals in the ground right there. And it's the tip of the iceberg. It's only a fraction of the total potential. We've got diamond drilling underway, mineralization at depth. The share price is up, 1,500-1,600%. In the past couple of months. Potentially it could go much, much higher, but we're in the wait and see mode, see what the drilling comes up, see what the metallurgical studies come back with. But it does seem to be a monster discovery at this stage.
Well done. It sounds like you're prepared to hold on there.
Well, I think the thing is Christian was saying, let your winners run. I think, a few years ago, I say sort of 5-6 years ago, I had money, but not real money, not serious money. And now I have serious money. And when you have serious money, it's quite fun because you don't need to worry about the mortgage payment or the bills or, school fees or things like that, because you can cover them. And then you can let your winners run. Yeah. And if they go to zero, it doesn't destroy you. It destroys you emotionally, but it doesn't destroy you financially.
Yeah.
And I think with something like this, if you hit the home run, maybe take a little off the table. And that 100x that Christian was talking about, I'm not sure what stock he was referring to. It might have been Greatland. But,
That would probably be, I think, Eurasia Mining.
Oh, Eurasia. Yeah. Well, I think that was one of your winners as well, wasn't it?
Well, I was with Optiva at the time. So Christian kindly invited me in I was a broker. I was head of broking at the time. So, I was invited into the placing, and I bought in the aftermarket, and it went crazy. But you're right, once you know you're into something good, try and run your winners and just try and be sensible and take a little bit off the table, because you never know what's around the corner.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is with Eurasia, I mean, another one that looking at the moment, or have done for the past few months, done extraordinarily well, Delta Gold, right?
Yes.
And their sort of their multi kind of pronged approach to their quantum research in universities, really, really strong. But I think perhaps what's stronger is that they raised the capital at pre-IPO and also IPO stage with the right people. And these people believe in the story and they're not selling, so it propels the share price higher, right?
Yeah, yes.
And if you look at the IPOs that we've had over the past 4 weeks, and I've been talking to 7 or 8 companies looking at IPOing in the next couple of months. Like, the IPO pipeline is like really, really back in a big way right now.
But yeah.
Server Resources is up a little bit, so price the IPO fairly, and it is where it basically where it should be. An IPO, everyone makes the 10-20% after the first couple of weeks. Perfect. Mm. Halo Minerals dropped on the first day because they didn't lock somebody up in the shell, and that was an error. Mm-hmm. Rift Helium is slightly down on the IPO, but just ticking along. I'm sure it will be fine in the long run. And then European Green Transition went from 6p to 9p very, very quickly and increased 50%. And so a lot of this is just, who have you got in the pre-IPO? Who have you got in the IPO? Do they believe in the story? Do they hold the stock when you take them in?
And do they have the incentive to hold it for tax reasons?
Indeed.
For SEIS and EIS.
3 years, isn't it?
Three years. So there's I suppose sometimes, people go, well, I'm going to just pay the 24% capital gains tax because this gain is way too much. But who knows? But well done to Delta Gold. Well done to Kendrick Resources. Well done to you, Charles. You're on fire.
Well, at the moment, we'll see how it goes. I mean, it tends to be that just as you're doing the best you've ever done in your life, something comes out of, you know, out of a blind corner and smacks you back down and teaches you humility.
Yeah.
But at the moment, it seems to be. But I don't think it's me in particular. Like, I'm picking good stocks, but it is just the market in general. It's just how many. Let's 2 years ago, you know, everything was just collapsing, right? But this, in the past sort of 4.5 months since the year started, how many multi-bagger runs have we seen so far? Do you know? Right. I kind of lost count.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And the really fun aspect of it, and you know, this is what happened with Kendrick or with Mkango or, you know, various others, is that it's shares in companies that I bought a long time ago that I've just forgotten about in many cases. Yeah. You know, yeah. Where you go, well, the original thesis didn't pan out and that's life. And then suddenly, actually, the original thesis was correct. It just needed time.
Yeah.
You know?
No, very good. Well, on that note, Charles, thanks very much. Let's call it a wrap. Thank you for everyone for tuning in to Monday Upbeat Markets. Don't forget, if you like what you see, please like and subscribe. And remember, mum's the word.
This podcast was brought to you by Monday Upbeat Markets. If you would like to appear on a future episode of the Mums Podcast, please email mondayupbeatmarkets@gmail.com.